Hi, Dave Emery here. This is, for the record, program number 1021, Faskus Book. In Your Facebook, Part 3, A Virtual Panopticon, Part 3. This is being recorded on August 21st of the year 2018. The title of the program, obviously, is a takeoff on Facebook. Faskus Book refers to the fascus. That is the symbol of the Roman Republic. It is a bundle of sticks bound together by a leather thong with an axe head. It is the word from which fascism is openly derived. And looking at Facebook, everybody's wonderful social network, I think some of the things that I warned about in For the Record 718, recorded on July 4th of 2010, should hopefully be becoming, if not clearer, at least somewhat more accessible to listeners. Before going into some of the information that we're going to be covering in this program, we're going to go back to the introduction to For the Record 718. In Your Facebook, A Virtual Panopticon, I have a question mark after that. On July 4th of 2010, that question mark is no longer there. The Panopticon, by the way, was a type of prison first proposed by Jeremy Bentham, in which the imprisoned would not be able to see his or her jailers, but they would be able to see the prisoner at all times. And I proposed that maybe that had some relevance for the social network. This is from, For the Record, 718.
This program is being recorded on July 4th of the year 2010. Well, happy Independence Day to all of you. That's obviously when this is being recorded. It is interesting to contemplate the traditions of liberties as mutilated as they have become in this country and what it was that was going through at least some people's minds at the inception of the Republic. And to contemplate what has happened in terms of the development of technology. I think that Albert Einstein's observation with regard to the development of atomic weapons that, quote, everything has changed but our way of thinking, unquote, applies to a lot of other technological developments as well. As I'm speaking on Independence Day of 2010, it is remarkable to contemplate a major technological development, which is seen, I think, or perhaps felt, would be a better word, to be intrinsically liberating, something that actually frees people up from the limitations of modern industrial and commercial life. And that is social networking on the internet. The most successful and best known of these types, of these websites, of course, is Facebook. And again, as I'm talking on Independence Day of 2010, Facebook has been in the news quite a bit in recent weeks in connection with its privacy policy and with regard to concerns on the part of many that Facebook and other similar institutions basically expose the users of them to a tremendous amount of personal invasion in terms of compromising of privacy and personal data. In the information age, and we are certainly there, the internet age in particular, information is power. It's something of a cliche. And knowledge is strength. And because of that, anyone seeking to acquire power and knowledge, and wealth is derivative to an extent it also produces both, is necessarily going to want to have information at their disposal. Information, of course, is also essential for the execution of political agendas and also for the execution of military agendas as well. And as such, it is not in the least a little bit surprising to see the intelligence community deeply involved with the world of high tech, and not surprisingly, Facebook and other social networking sites. I personally don't see the intelligence community and specifically CIA involvement in this as all that remarkable, given the given, to coin a phrase, that any major technological development with strategic applications and implications is necessarily going to draw a lot of interest on the part of and participation on the part of intelligence services. And that is certainly the case with Facebook and with other social networking sites. And we're going to talk specifically about people associated with InQtel, a CIA venture capital fund that was established in the late 1990s with Facebook. But what is more interesting to me concerns the far right-wing viewpoints dressed up with something of a libertarian facade of not only Peter Thiel, but perhaps others associated with him in some of his overlapping business ventures.
That again from For the Record 718 from July 4th of 2010. Peter Thiel has turned out to be one of Donald Trump's primary Silicon Valley advisors. He also is the founder and I believe still the largest stockholder of Palantir. That is a company that makes anti-terror software and surveillance technology for the NSA, CIA, and other government agencies, as well as for corporations. They make a counter-terror software called PRISM that they insist is not the same PRISM that was a focal point of Eddie Snowden's documentation. We are supposed to believe that there was one PRISM that Eddie was talking about. They do, by the way, Palantir does do business with NSA as well as CIA. So we are to believe that the counter-terror software manufactured by Palantir is not the same PRISM as was the focal point of the Snowden documentation. There also allegedly are two other counter-terror PRISM software programs, one used by Germany and the other used by NATO, particularly in Afghanistan. So, according to official pronunciation, there are four separate counter-terror software programs, all with the same name, but having nothing whatsoever to do with one another. All of them used apparently by NATO and or NSA. I am highly skeptical of that. I think it's basically a PR move. Certainly Palantir would not want any of their product associated with the Snowden documentation. The Silicon Valley companies are nothing if not litigious, and I think it is altogether unlikely that Palantir would tolerate another company using the same name for a type of software that functions in the same capacity. Peter Thiel was at one time the largest stockholder in Facebook. Now I think he is about number seven. He also sits on Facebook's board. He is someone that has concluded that democracy and freedom are mutually exclusive and cites women's suffrage, the acquisition of the ballot by women, as one of the major factors contributing to what he sees as that defect. Peter Thiel also, as we have seen, takes political direction from Carl Schmitt, who was the Third Reich's key legal theoretician. That, I think, is more than a little instructive, and we are going to be taking a look at Facebook's capricious approach to many of the reforms that they have promised in the wake of the Cambridge Analytica scandal and the revelation that they had been doing work on behalf of the Trump campaign. I think the whole Russiagate thing is essentially a misdirection play, as they say in football. Cambridge Analytica is not a Russian agency. Robert Mercer and his daughter Rebecca are not Russian agents. Peter Thiel is not a Russian agent. The FBI is not a Russian agency. James Comey is not a Russian agent either. The overt, out on the street and in your face lies of American fascism, something that really arose and triumphed on November 22nd, 1963, is not because of Russia. More about Russia. We've spoken about Russiagate at great length in the past. But the things we are talking about here, the things we have spoken about in connection with Cambridge Analytica, have nothing to do with Russia. The Cambridge Analytica company is now reforming as a supposedly different firm, but it appears that basically it is simply regrouping. And one of the key board members of the allegedly new, quote, Cambridge Analytica, unquote, is a business partner with Eric Prince, the founder of what used to be Blackwater. And he also is the brother of Betsy DeVos, Donald Trump's Secretary of Education. We're going to be taking a look at the outsourcing of some of the psychological profiling that was being done by Cambridge Analytica to a third-party app. We're going to take a look at how Facebook continues to favor right-wing groups. We're also going to look at allegations by a tech company called 643 that alleged that Facebook basically was operating like a mafia and was deliberately marketing their users' data to third parties and allegedly used heavy-handed tactics to do that. The plaintiff in this lawsuit has alleged that Facebook was behaving like the mafia. The article is from May of this year. I am not aware of any further disposition of this lawsuit, so I will simply couch the charges by 643 as allegations. As far as I know, the lawsuit has not been resolved. The information is, of course, being contested by Facebook, who have attempted to squash the suit using California's powerful anti-slap suit legislation or legal code. It remains to be seen. Facebook, as well as Amazon and Google, are now attempting to get into people's banking data. They want all of your banking data. That may very well, boy, as if they haven't got enough information. We're going to be talking about not only in your Facebook, but in your passbook, as in bank passbook, or in your checkbook might be a good way of talking about it. Big data, Facebook, Amazon, and Google now want to get into your bank account as well. We're going to review some terrifying aspects of what Facebook is working on with regard to artificial intelligence. They are working on brain-to-computer interface, which will basically permit your thoughts, not just your actions, your online behavior, but your thoughts to be monitored and databased and put out to third parties if their past practices are any sort of guide. Much of that computer-to-brain interface technology can be made to go two ways using some of the principles of the neurophone. We have spoken about that in, for the record, 968 and 997 briefly. We're also going to take a look at some very interesting statements by Nigel Oakes, who was the founder of SCL. That's Sarah Clara Lara, so to speak, SCL, the parent company, the predecessor of Cambridge Analytica. Very interesting indeed. And we're going to review information about the Tay Twitter bot developed by Microsoft. It learned from people it encountered, and in 24 hours, it went full on Nazi. These are some of the things we are going to be talking about, hence the name or the title of the program, Faskus Book, In Your Facebook, Part 3, A Virtual Panopticon, Part 3, with no question mark after that. beginning from the Verge blog, that's V-E-R-G-E, from July 17th of 2018. An article by Nick Stat, capital S-T-A-T-T as in Thomas, undercover Facebook moderator was instructed not to remove fringe groups or hate speech. An investigative journalist who went undercover as a Facebook moderator in Ireland says the company lets pages from far-right fringe groups, quote, exceed deletion threshold, unquote, and that those pages are, quote, subject to different treatment in the same category as pages belonging to governments and news organizations, unquote. The accusation is a damning one, undermining Facebook's claims that it is actively trying to cut down on fake news, propaganda, hate speech, and other harmful content that may have significant real-world impact. The undercover journalist detailed his findings in a new documentary titled Inside Facebook, Secrets of the Social Network, that just aired on the UK's Channel 4. The investigation outlines questionable practices on behalf of CPL Resources, a third-party content moderator firm based in Dublin that Facebook has worked with since 2010. Those questionable practices primarily involve a hands-off approach to flagged and reported content like graphic violence, hate speech, and racist and other bigoted rhetoric from far-right groups. The undercover reporter says he was also instructed to ignore users who looked as if they were under 13 years of age, which is the minimum age requirement to sign up for Facebook in accordance with the Child Online Protection Act, a 1998 privacy law passed in the U.S. designed to protect young children from exploitation and harmful and violent content on the Internet. The documentary insinuates that Facebook takes a hands-off approach to such content, including blatantly false stories parading as truth, because it engages users for longer and drives up advertising revenue. Skipping down. Now, we're going to come back to this part of this post later in the program near the end. Meanwhile, Facebook is ramping up efforts in its artificial intelligence division with the hope that one day algorithms can solve these pressing moderation problems without any human input. Earlier today, the company said it would be accelerating its AI research efforts to include more researchers and engineers, as well as new academia partnerships and expansions of its AI research labs in 8 locations around the world. The long-term goal of the company's AI division is to create, quote, machines that have some level of common sense, unquote, and that learn, quote, how the world works by observation, like young children do in the first few months of life, unquote. We're going to take a look at how that one may play out near the end of the program. Apparently the kind of data harvesting and marketing mischief that Facebook has been engaging in and the psychological profiling they were doing with Cambridge Analytica, whose founders, Robert and his daughter Rebecca Mercer, took a lot of advice from Steve Bannon, who was on the board, and they all fall to the right of Ivan the Terrible. They have outsourced some of that work to a Canadian consultancy group. This from the Financial Times of June 1st of 2018, an article by Alia, A-L-I-Y-A, Ram, R-A-M, and Hanna Kuchler, K-U-C-H-L-E-R. The title, Aggregate IQ, had data of thousands of Facebook users. Cambridge Analytica, recall, was using the data, basically mining and then transmitting for use the data of 87 million Facebook users. This article reads in part, Aggregate IQ, a Canadian consultancy alleged to have links to Cambridge Analytica, collected and stored the data of thousands of Facebook users, according to redacted computer files seen by the Financial Times. The social network banned Aggregate IQ, a data company, from its platform as part of a cleanup operation following the Cambridge Analytica scandal, on suspicion that the company could have been improperly accessing user information. That's right. On the suspicion that Adolf Hitler may have harbored some malevolent feelings towards various ethnic groups. Well, I love the understatement here. Of course, this is the Financial Times, so perhaps our British journalistic understatement, very dry in its manifestation, is appropriate. But I love this. On suspicion that the company could have been improperly accessing user information. Well, we're shocked that that could have happened. I guess I'm laughing at that old statement by Nietzsche. A joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling. Continuing. However, Chris Vickery, V-I-C-K-E-R-Y, a security researcher this week found an app on the platform called AIQ Johnny Scraper, registered to the company, raising fresh questions about the effectiveness of Facebook's policing efforts. God, say it does that, doesn't it? Skipping down. The files do not indicate whether users had given permission for their Facebook likes to be tracked through third-party apps or whether they were scraped from publicly visible pages. Mr. Vickery, who analyzed Aggregate IQ's files after uncovering a trove of information online, said that the company appeared to have gathered data from Facebook users despite telling Canadian members of Parliament, quote, "We don't really process data on folks," unquote. The files also include posts that focus on political issues with statements such as, like, if you agree with Reagan, that's Ronald Reagan, that government is the problem, unquote, but it is not clear if this information originated on Facebook. Mr. Sylvester said the software Aggregate IQ had designed allowed, Mr. Sylvester said the software Aggregate IQ had designed allowed its client to browse public comments. Quote, "It is possible that some of those public comments or posts are in the file," he said. It is possible. Yeah, it sounds like it just might be a little bit possible, doesn't it, though? A very interesting lawsuit is unfolding. I have not heard of any further developments since this article about the lawsuit came out. The article is from May 24th of this year. This is from The Guardian by Carol Cadwallader, C-A-D-W-A-L-L-A-D-R, and Emma Graham Harrison. Ms. Cadwallader has done some very good work on Facebook, Cambridge Analytica et al. The title, again, from The Guardian of May 24th of 2018, the title speaks for itself as far as what the plaintiffs have been alleging about Facebook. Zuckerberg set up fraudulent scheme to, quote, weaponize, unquote, data, court case alleges. Again, this is quite an allegation. I am using that because as far as I know, again, there have been no further developments in this lawsuit that I am aware of. But again, Zuckerberg set up fraudulent scheme to weaponize data, court case alleges. Mark Zuckerberg faces allegations that he developed a, quote, malicious and fraudulent scheme, unquote, to exploit vast amounts of private data to earn Facebook billions and force rivals out of business. A company suing Facebook in a California court claims the social network's chief executive weaponized, unquote, the ability to access data from any user's network of friends, the feature at the heart of the Cambridge Analytica scandal. A legal motion filed last week in the Superior Court of San Mateo, California, draws upon extensive confidential emails and messages between Facebook senior executives, including Mark Zuckerberg. He is named individually in the case and, it is claimed, had personal oversight of the scheme. Facebook rejects all claims and has made a motion to have the case dismissed using a free speech defense. It claims the First Amendment protects its right to make, quote, editorial decisions, unquote, as it sees fit. Zuckerberg and other senior executives have asserted that Facebook is a platform, not a publisher, most recently in testimony to Congress. Heather Whitney, a legal scholar who has written about social media companies for the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University, said in her opinion, this exposed a potential tension for Facebook. Quote, Facebook's claims in court that it is an editor for First Amendment purposes and thus is free to censor and alter the content available on its site is in tension with their especially recent claims before the public and U.S. Congress to be neutral platforms, unquote. This, again, because this really expresses the tension in the dynamic of the plaintiffs versus what Zuckerberg and company are claiming. Facebook's claims in court that it is an editor for First Amendment purposes and thus free to censor and alter the content available on its site is in tension, that's T-E-N-S-I-O-N, i.e. conflict, with their especially recent claims before the public and U.S. Congress to be neutral platforms, unquote. The company that has filed the case, a former startup called 643, is now trying to stop Facebook from having the case thrown out and has submitted legal arguments that draw on thousands of emails, the details of which are currently redacted. Facebook has until next Tuesday to file a motion requesting that the evidence remains sealed. Otherwise, the documents will be made public. Again, interjecting, I have not heard about any disposition of the case in this regard. The developer alleges the correspondence shows Facebook paid lip service to privacy concerns in public, but behind the scenes exploited its users' private information. It claims internal emails and messages reveal a cynical and abusive system set up to exploit access to users' private information alongside a raft of anti-competitive behaviors, skipping down. The papers submitted to the court last week allege that Facebook was not only aware of the implications of its privacy policy, but actively exploited them, intentionally creating and effectively flagging up the loophole that Cambridge Analytica used to collect data on up to 87 million American users. The lawsuit also claims Zuckerberg misled the public and Congress about Facebook's role in the Cambridge Analytica scandal by portraying it as a victim of a third party that had abused its rules for collecting and sharing data. Quote, the evidence uncovered by plaintiff demonstrates that the Cambridge Analytica scandal was not the result of mere negligence on Facebook's part, but was rather the direct consequence of the malicious and fraudulent scheme Zuckerberg designed in 2012 to cover up its failure to anticipate the world's transition to smartphones, unquote, legal documents said. The lawsuit claims to have uncovered fresh evidence concerning how Facebook made decisions about users' privacy. It sets out allegations that in 2012, Facebook's advertising business, which focused on desktop ads, was devastated by a rapid and unexpected shift to smartphones. Zuckerberg responded to this by forcing developers to buy expensive ads on the new, underused mobile service, or risk having their access to data at the core of their business cut off, the court case alleges. Quote, Zuckerberg weaponized the data of one-third of the planet's population in order to cover up his failure to transition Facebook's business from desktop computers to mobile ads before the market became aware that Facebook's financial projections in its 2012 IPO filings were false, unquote, one court filing said. In the latest filing, 643 alleges that Facebook deliberately used its huge amounts of valuable and highly personal user data to tempt developers to create platforms within its system, implying that they would have long-term access to personal information, including data from subscribers, Facebook friends. Once their businesses were running and reliant on data relating to likes, birthdays, friend lists, and other Facebook minutia, the social media company could and did target any that became too successful, looking to extract money from them, co-opt them, or destroy them, the documents allege. 643 alleges that up to 40,000 companies were effectively defrauded in this way by Facebook. It also alleges that senior executives, including Zuckerberg, personally devised and managed the scheme, individually deciding which companies would be cut off from data or allowed preferential access. The lawsuit alleges that Facebook initially focused on kickstarting its mobile advertising platform as the rapid adoption of smartphone decimated the desktop advertising business in 2012. It later used its ability to cut off data to force rivals out of business or coerce owners of apps Facebook coveted into selling below the market price, even though they were not breaking any terms of their contracts, according to the documents. David Godkin, G-O-D-K-I-N, 643's lead counsel said, quote, we believe the public has a right to see the evidence and are confident the evidence clearly demonstrates the truth of our allegations and much more, unquote. Sandy Parakilis, P-A-R-I-K-I-L-I-S, a former Facebook employee turned whistleblower who has testified to the UK Parliament about its business practices, said its allegations were a, quote, bombshell, unquote. He claimed to MPs Facebook's senior executives were aware of abuses of friends' data back in 2011-2012, and he was warned by them not to look into the issue. They felt that it was better not to know. I found that utterly horrifying, he said, again quoting, if true, these allegations show a huge betrayal of users, partners, and regulators. They would also show Facebook using its monopoly power to kill competition and putting profits over protecting its users. Now, that part I don't believe. I cannot believe that Facebook would put profits over the protection of its users. No, they wouldn't do that. Not more than a half dozen times before lunch on Friday, anyway. Now, the scandal concerning Cambridge Analytica has led to the ostensible demise of Cambridge Analytica. However, it is kind of like meet the new boss, same as the old boss. There is a new company called Emerdata, capital E-M-E-R-D-A-T-A. About this, the New York Times wrote on May 2nd of 2018, article by Nicholas Contasori and Matthew Rosenberg, Cambridge Analytica to file for bankruptcy after misuse of Facebook data. Skipping down. In a statement posted to its website, Cambridge Analytica said the controversy had driven away virtually all of the company's customers, forcing it to file for bankruptcy in both the U.S. and Britain. The Elections Division of Cambridge's British affiliate SCL Group will also shut down, the company said. More about SCL later. But the company's announcement left several questions unanswered, including who would retain the company's intellectual property, the so-called psychographic voter profiles built in part with data from Facebook, and whether Cambridge Analytica's data mining business would return under new auspices. Skipping down again. In recent months, executives at Cambridge Analytica and SCL Group, along with the Mercer family, have moved to create a new firm, Emerdata, again, capital E-M-E-R-D-A-T-A, based in Britain, according to British records. The new company's directors include Johnson Ko Chun Shun, that's Johnson as in Johnson and Johnson, K-O, then new word, capital C-H-U-N, and then capital S-H-U-N, just who this is. The new company's directors include Johnson Ko Chun Shun, a Hong Kong financier and business partner of Eric Prince. Mr. Prince founded the private security firm Blackwater, which was renamed Z, capital X-E Services, after Blackwater contractors were convicted of killing Iraqi citizens. Cambridge and SCL officials privately raised the possibility that Emerdata could be used for a Blackwater-style rebranding of Cambridge Analytica and the SCL Group, according to people with knowledge of the companies who asked for anonymity to describe confidential conversations. One plan under consideration was to sell off the combined company's data and intellectual property. An executive and a part owner of SCL Group, Nigel Oakes, O-A-K-E-S, has publicly described Emerdata as a way of rolling up the two companies under one new banner. With a director who is a business partner of Eric Prince, the former Navy SEAL and founder of Blackwater, and brother of Betsy DeVos, the education secretary for Donald Trump. Eric Prince, a major contributor to Donald Trump, and in and of himself, a very formidable individual, and when one considers the potential for the many special ops troops working for his security company to exact who knows what from anyone whose mind data they didn't care for, well, that is very interesting to contemplate indeed. So a business partner of Eric Prince is going to be one of the directors of the new company, Emerdata, that has arisen from Cambridge Analytica and SCL. And Nigel Oakes, describes Emerdata, quote, as a way of rolling up the two companies under one new banner. Facebook, and as we will see, Google and Amazon are attempting to move into the one area they have not been able to dominate, namely banking. This doesn't look good at all from the Quartz blog, Q-U-A-R-T-Z as in zebra, from November 2nd of 2017, by John Detrice, D capital B-E-T-R-I-X-H-E. BlackRock is worried technology firms are about to know, quote, every single thing you do. Reads in part, the president of BlackRock, the world's biggest asset manager, is among those who think big technology firms could invade the financial industry's turf. Google and Facebook have thrived by collecting and storing data about consumer habits, our emails, search queries, and the videos we watch. Understanding of our financial lives could be an even richer source of data for them to sell to advertisers. Quote, I worry about the data. said BlackRock President Robert Capito, capital K-A-P-I-T-O, at a conference in London today, November 2nd. We're going to have some serious competitors, unquote. If tech companies are in control of payment systems, they'll know, quote, every single thing that you do, Capito said. It's a different business model from traditional banking. Data is more valuable for tech firms that sell a range of different products than it is for banks that only sell financial services, he said. Capito is worried about because the effort to win control of payment systems is already underway. Apple will allow its iMessage users to send cash to each other, and Facebook is integrating person-to-person PayPal payments into its Messenger app. As more payments flow through mobile phones, banks are worried that they could get left behind, relegated to serving as low-margin utilities. To fight back, they've started initiatives such as Zelle, capital Z-E-L-L-E, to compete with payment services like PayPal. Barclays CEO Jess, capital J-E-S, Staley, capital S-T-A-L-E-Y, pointed out at the conference that banks probably have the richest data pool of any sector of society, and he says some 25% of the UK's economy flows through Barclays payment systems. That's just one bank. The industry could use that information to offer better services. Companies could alert people that they're not saving enough for retirement or suggest ways to save money on their expenses. The trick is accessing that data and analyzing it like a big technology company would. And banks still have one thing going for them. There is a massive fortress of rules and regulations surrounding the industry. No one wants to be regulated like we are, unquote, Staley said. And in that same context, from August 6th of 2018, the Wall Street Journal article, Emily Glazer Deepa Sitaraman, that's capital S-W-E-T-H-A-R-A-M-A-N, and Anna Maria Andriotis, A-N-D-R-I-O-T-I-S, the Wall Street Journal titles this article, Facebook to Banks. Give us your data, we'll give you our users, unquote. A modest trade-off, that. You give us your data, and we'll give you our users. Reads in part, the social media giant has asked large U.S. banks to share detailed financial information about their customers, including card transactions and checking account balances as part of an effort to offer new services to users. Facebook increasingly wants to be a platform where people buy and sell goods and services besides connecting with friends. The company over the past year asked J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, Wells Fargo & Company, Citigroup Incorporated, and U.S. Bancorp to discuss potential offerings it could host for bank customers on Facebook Messenger, said people familiar with the matter. Facebook has talked about a feature that would allow its users their checking account balances, the people said. It has also pitched fraud alerts, some of the people said. Data privacy is a sticking point in the bank's conversations with Facebook, according to people familiar with the matter, as bloody well it should be in light of Facebook's past behavior. Continuing, the talks are taking place as Facebook faces several investigations over its ties to political analytics firm Cambridge Analytica, which accessed data on as many as 87 million Facebook users without their consent. One large U.S. bank pulled away from talks due to privacy concerns, some of the people said. Facebook has told banks that the additional customer information could be used to offer services that might entice users to spend more time on Messenger, a person familiar with the discussions said. The company is trying to deepen user engagement. Investors shaved more than $120 billion from its market value in one day last month after it said its growth is starting to slow, skipping down. Facebook said it wouldn't use the bank data for advertising purposes or share it with third parties. Quick question to all of you in the audience. Do you believe this statement? Facebook said it wouldn't use the bank data for ad targeting purposes or share it with third parties. Do you believe that? Skipping down again. Alphabet Incorporated's Google and Amazon.com Incorporated have also asked banks to share data if they join with them in order to provide basic banking services on applications such as Google Assistant and Alexa, according to people familiar with the conversations. Now, again, reviewing something that we looked at in For the Record, well, we looked at in For the Record 946. We also came back to this briefly in For the Record 1017, and that is that Palantir, that is the security firm, the surveillance firm founded by Peter Thiel, and that makes a software, counterterror software program called Prism. Among its major clients are CIA and NSA. Palantir was assisting Cambridge Analytica with their operations on the psychological profiling of millions, according to some, 87 million Facebook users. Reviewing briefly, from a New York Times article by Nicholas Confessori and Matthew Rosenberg from March 27th of 2018. Actually, this would have been not in For the Record 946, but it was in 1017. Spy Contractors' Idea Helped Cambridge Analytica Harvest Facebook Data. Excerpting this. It was a Palantir employee in London working closely with the data scientists building Cambridge Analytica's psychological profile technology who suggested the scientists create their own app, a mobile phone-based personality quiz to gain access to Facebook users' friend networks, according to documents obtained by the New York Times. The revelations pulled Palantir, co-founded by the wealthy libertarian Peter Thiel, into the furor surrounding Cambridge, which improperly obtained Facebook data to build analytical tools it deployed on behalf of Donald J. Trump and other Republican candidates in 2016. Mr. Thiel, a supporter of President Trump, serves on the board at Facebook. Quote, "There were senior Palantir employees that were also working on the Facebook data," said Christopher Wiley, a data expert and Cambridge Analytica co-founder, in testimony before British lawmakers on Tuesday. The connections between Palantir and Cambridge Analytica were thrust into the spotlight by Mr. Wiley's testimony on Tuesday. Both companies are linked to tech-driven billionaires who backed Mr. Trump's campaign. Cambridge is chiefly owned by Robert Mercer, the computer scientist and hedge fund magnate, while Palantir was co-founded in 2003 by Mr. Thiel, who was an initial investor in Facebook. And by the way, at one point, its largest stockholder and is still on the board of directors of Facebook. Now, we're going to review a few things. Note that Facebook feels that the solution to its problems in managing data, and not according to a UK Channel 4 investigator, properly disciplining far-right groups and the blogs. They believe that the solution to this is the further development of artificial intelligence, or AI, which they will develop and which will learn from human beings. One of the interesting things about Facebook is that they employed a woman named Regina Dugan, or Duggan, D-U-G-A-N, formerly the head of DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agencies, which one author, Annie Jacobson, described in the title of her book as the Pentagon's brain. And in Building 8 of Facebook, their R&D building, which is based on or patterned after the operations of DARPA, they are working on brain-to-computer interface. Since I first mentioned this in For the Record 968, among other programs, Ms. Dugan has left Facebook. I do not know why that happened. I have not seen anything indicating that Facebook's twinning of artificial intelligence and brain-to-computer interface, which would permit them to database and perhaps sell to other third-party clients people's thoughts, not their browsing habits, not their likes, etc., not their friends, but their thoughts. Quoting from this article again, this is from the Gizmodo blog, G-I-Z-M-O-D-O, of April 19th of 2017, by Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-E-N-V, as in Victor Brown. Facebook literally wants to read your thoughts. Excerpting, Facebook wants to build its own brain-to-computer interface that will allow us to send thoughts straight to a computer. What if you could type directly from your brain? Regina Dugan, the head of the company's secretive hardware R&D division, Building 8, asked from the stage. Dugan then proceeded to show a video demo of a woman typing 8 words per minute directly from the stage. In a few years, she said, the team hopes to demonstrate a real-time silent speech system capable of delivering 100 words per minute. That's 5 times faster than you can type on your smartphone, and it is straight from your brain, she said. Your brain activity contains more information than what a word sounds like and how it's spelled. It also contains semantic information of what those words mean. And bear in mind, this will eventually be databased, and if Facebook's past practices are any guide, it would not be shocking if this was marketed to other parties. This might also permit reverse technology, which is the use of some of the principles of the Neurophone, which was invented and put into production decades ago, to broadcast back in. This would be the ultimate breach of privacy if, in fact, this becomes reality. And bear in mind that this will be linked to AIs, to artificial intelligence. They are going to be basically using your thoughts. Your thoughts will be databased, and if past behavior is any guide, it will be sold to other parties, or perhaps even just hacked by other parties. More from this article. Brain-computer interfaces are nothing new. DARPA, which Dugan used to head, has invested heavily in brain-computer interface technologies to do things like cure mental illness and restore memories to soldiers injured in war. But what Facebook is proposing is perhaps more radical, a world in which social media doesn't require picking up a phone or tapping a wristwatch in order to communicate with your friends, a world where we're connected all the time by thought alone, unquote. Facebook's Building 8 is modeled after DARPA, and its projects tend to be equally ambitious. And in another article about that from TechCrunch of April 19th of 2017 by Josh Constein, C-O-N-S-T-I-N-E, Facebook plans ethics board to monitor its brain-computer interface work. Facebook hopes to use optical neural imaging technology to scan the brain 100 times per second to detect thoughts and turn them into text. Meanwhile, it's working on skin hearing, unquote, that could translate sounds into haptic feedback that people can learn to understand like Braille. Quote, worryingly, Regina Dugan eventually appeared frustrated in response to my inquiries about how her team thinks about safety precautions for brain interfaces, saying, quote, the flip side of the question that you're asking is, why invent it at all? And I just believe that the optimistic perspective is that, on balance, technological advances have really meant good things for the world if they are handled responsibly. Well, perhaps that is, of course, a very big if indeed. Now, back to SCL, back to Nigel Oakes. SCL is the parent company of Cambridge Analytica, and from some of the sci-fi-ish implications of Facebook's impending brain-to-computer interface technology, New York Times of April 27th of 2018 by Adam Satariano, S-A-T-A-R-I-A-N-O. Facebook gets grilling in UK that it avoided in US about the panel in the in Britain. The panel has published audio records in which an executive tied to Cambridge Analytica, that's the aforementioned Nigel Oakes, discusses how the Trump campaign used techniques used by the Nazis to target voters. One more time. The panel has published audio records in which an executive tied to Cambridge Analytica discusses how the Trump campaign used techniques used by the Nazis to target voters. And from another New York Times article, this from April 21st of 2018 by Ellen Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, the origins of an ad man's manipulation empire, again about Nigel Oakes of SCL, the parent company of Cambridge Analytica. Adolf Hitler, quote, didn't have a problem with the Jews at all, but people did not like the Jews, he told the academic Emma L. Bryant, B-R-I-A-N-T, a senior lecturer in journalism at the University of Essex. He went on to say that Donald J. Trump had done the same thing by tapping into grievances toward immigrants and Muslims. This sort of campaign, he continued, did not require bells and whistles from technology or social science. Quote, what happened with Trump, you can forget all the micro-targeting and micro-data and whatever and come back to some very, very simple things, he told Dr. Bryant. Trump had the, and it's a slang term beginning with B for testicles I can't use on the air, and I mean really the same slang term, to say what people wanted to hear. Now, last two items that I'm going to bring up. In a number of programs, we have talked about the Tay, that's capital T-A-Y, Twitter bot, an AI developed by Microsoft. In Ars Technica blog of March 24th of 2016, Peter Bright wrote, Microsoft terminates its Tay AI chatbot after she turns into a Nazi. And the point being that it learns from people around us. That is exactly what Facebook's engineers and scientific people are touting so optimistically, that they hope to develop an AI which learns from people, from other people, what to do. Well, if those people are like Nigel Oakes or like Cambridge Analytica or Robert Mercer or Rebecca Mercer or Eric Prince or God knows who, well, God help us. From Popular Mechanics of March 24th of 2016 by Eric Weimer, the most dangerous thing about AI is that it has to learn from us. Yep. In January of 1995, almost a quarter of a century ago, I warned about artificial intelligence and what it might do. This is from the lecture L2, again from January of 1995.
I think that the imperfections of human beings, and human beings are highly imperfect, may ultimately lead to the creation of artificial intelligences. It would not surprise me if we survive long enough that at some point in the future we might create an artificial intelligence, a machine which would actually represent something of a life form, in that it would be self-conscious and intelligent enough to to regard itself as separate from its actual creators. It would not surprise me if these machines eventually decided to turn on their creators. Now, we're talking about something that might take place thousands of years in the future and decide that basically the machines should supplant people altogether because people are sloppy. You know, they have cells, they get sick, they have emotions, they have feelings, and however much we try to get them to sit on the tack, it just doesn't work. However, a machine can sit on the tack because it doesn't have any feelings. You just don't put any circuitry in that part of its construction. It would not surprise me if we eventually, at some point in the future, built machines which replaced us quite consciously, saying that people are stupid. You know, they're stupid, they're weak, they have emotions. They are inefficient, and they are not really in keeping with the dictates of the corporate state. If we created a machine at some point in the future, maybe 10,000 years or 20,000 years from now, which simply put us out of existence because we are not efficient.
Again, that was yours truly from Lecture L2, Technology, Theocracy, and the Thousand-Year Reich, warning about AIs 20 years before Stephen Hawking did. Indeed, if the AIs do learn from us, ultimately they will be learning the brutal social Darwinism of the SS. Just witness what happened with Tay. This concludes For the Record program number 1021, Faskus Book. In Your Facebook, Part 3, A Virtual Panopticon, Part 3, being recorded on August 21st of 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.